Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons and other podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or any popular podcasting platform. Our worship times are on Sundays at 9 and 10:45 a.m.
I want to suggest something to you. I want to propose something to you. And I want you to imagine with me for just a moment that you're watching TV and it's late at night, and maybe you had an extra hour of sleep ahead so you felt like you could stay up. Maybe it's one of those nights when you just can't sleep. And you find yourself watching TV because you don't know what else to do, and you're watching it mindlessly, and you go past all the news programs, you go past all the late-night programs, the late-night programs, and now you're into that zombie zone where it's these infomercials, one after the other, and you're seeing kitchen gadgets that you don't know how you could possibly have lived this long without, but you resist, and then there's this tape that you can even cut a boat in two, and it puts it back together, and but then there's something else. Then there is something that says, listen, there is something out there that is scientifically proven to improve your health. And now you're paying attention. Not only that, but it will increase the way you think. It will scientifically improve the way your brain functions. It increases happiness, reduces stress, and reduces depression. There is an inner strength that it gives you. You have better self-esteem, and now you're really paying attention. And what is this that's going on there? And there's the charts to prove it. You will sleep better, which at this point sounds pretty good too. And not only that, but you will be more attractive to others because it reduces your aggression and it increases your empathy. It doesn't make you lose weight, but it does help you to eat healthier. You eat less bad things for you when you have this, and there is a certain clarity in a way of dealing with stress. Would you be interested in buying this? And more than that, who wouldn't? And more than that, who wouldn't want to invest in the stock of something like that? And then we find out that all of that is wrapped up into this one thing that's essential, that how did we live this far, this long without it? And then, but wait, there's more. It's free. And it's been here all the time. And it's called gratitude. I knew he was going to say that. Didn't he talk about this last year? Yes, and the year before. Why does he keep talking about this stuff? Gratitude is that thing that is out there, we hear about, we know about. I'll bet I don't tell you anything you don't already know today. But it's one of those things we need to be reminded of from time to time. November seems like a perfect time, and I'm going to take the next month to talk about gratitude. We're going to look into it, and here's my hope. My hope is at the end of today, not only can I convince you that it's timely, because some people say, this is the worst time to talk about gratitude. There's an election on Tuesday, for crying out loud. It is guaranteed that just about 50% of the people are going to be really ticked off come Tuesday night or Wednesday. About half the country is going to feel like they got robbed or weren't listened to. How can you talk about gratitude when we have scenes of mass funerals from mass shootings in synagogues? How can you do that when there are children who are being run over at bus stops? This is the most tone-deaf time to talk about gratitude. Why don't you wait closer to Thanksgiving when things settle down, and then we can be grateful? I get that. But what I want to propose is that gratitude is that thing that is essential. It is essential, and not only that, it's worth our investment, and it may be the most timely thing in the world in which to invest, particularly today. And to do that, I want to get back to our passage, and I want to get back to a couple troubling questions that are there. And the first question is that Jesus, after he has healed 10 people, and only one comes back, and he says, weren't 10 made clean? Where the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except a foreigner? All the people who should have known better, where are they? And on the one hand, we'd say, well, that's just rude. That's just bad parenting. They weren't taught to send thank you notes. But it goes deeper than that, because there is something that I believe that gets to who we are that's even more troubling. And part of it is in that very next phrase when Jesus says, get up, go on your way, your faith has made you well. Now, you don't have to be a Bible scholar to go, wait a minute, this person had nothing to do with faith. Jesus is the one who did it. And you might even be more troubled by the fact that in some of the older translation, King James and some others, even to this day, it doesn't say made well. It says it has saved you. And that's going to cause some real consternation depending on how you understand that word saved. Sometimes we have narrowed, particularly in modern times, we have narrowed that word saved down so that saved is what happens to you after you die so that God will let you into heaven and now you are saved. And here it's being used in a whole different way. Here it is being used, and just a little bit of background here. Jesus is using two different words. There's this word for healing, and then there's this word for being made well, which is the exact same word that is used for saved. So, is this person saved, or are they being made well? Yes. As far as Jesus is concerned, as far as the Bible is concerned, they really are one and the same. It is to be made whole in both cases. And the essential ingredient, the essential thing from just being healed, being blessed, and being made well is gratitude. It is the essential ingredient. So how can it be that someone who has been healed, someone who has been blessed, isn't made well? How can it be that someone can be wealthy and not well? Someone can be successful and not well. Someone can have every form of blessing, can be affluent, in control, and not well. It happens every day. It happens to most of us on some days, and for some, a lot more. And it has to do with how we understand this word gratitude, what it is, what it isn't. There is this part of gratitude, a couple misperceptions, and one of them is that, well, gratitude is sort of like the equivalent when we talk about positive thinking. It has to do with optimism. And there's nothing wrong with optimism, and there's nothing wrong with positive thinking. They're good most of the time. They do more than the opposites do. But gratitude is not that. In fact, gratitude kicks in just when those two things run out of gas. There is this misperception that the Bible is sort of a Pollyanna, you have to give thanks to God for everything that happens. But that's not what the Bible says. The Bible says give thanks in everything. And there is a world of difference between those two things. Giving thanks for everything gets you into some crazy things where you're trying to drum up some enthusiasm, some optimism, when everything around you says no. Being thankful in the midst is able to look for the gifts even as things are falling apart. You do not have to give thanks because your loved one is sick and in the hospital. You don't have to give thanks for that. But there is a way to give thanks in the middle of that that people find every day. You can give thanks that there even is a hospital and that there is competency in the doctors, the nurses, the staff, the technicians, that there is care around not only that hospital but in your community that gathers around. You're finding the gifts even in the midst of a world that is falling apart. And even if the worst happens and the person doesn't get better, you don't have to give thanks for that, but you can certainly give thanks in the middle of it. That death doesn't get the last word. That the last chapter isn't one of sorrow and grief and suffering. That the last chapter has to do with joy and life. It is precisely when optimism and positive thinking have run into a wall and they can't find anything else. Gratitude becomes the base, the foundation, the wellspring for how we move forward. It is essential. It is essential to the way we do our life. It is essential in the Bible. That's why it's commanded so many times. So gratitude isn't a way of denying reality. It isn't a way of avoiding reality, covering it up. It takes us right back to the larger reality of who God is and what God is doing and invites us to align our lives with it precisely when things aren't going well. So gratitude is not only essential to a biblical faith, it's essential to a good life. Because when you and I talk about good life, we're really talking about, at our best, we're talking about being made well, whole, a sense of contentment and expansiveness. And there's basically two paths, two approaches that you might want to take that we do take. And the first one is this. You can be happy if, and you can have the good life if you can arrange all the contingencies around you to line up the way you want them to do that. If you can control all the outward contingencies, you can, if you have a perfect spouse and you have perfect kids or perfect parents, that you somehow are able to pull it off, that your entire family is perfect, that you have a job that is enjoyable, it is well-paying, there is never any criticism of what you do. In fact, it's all appreciation, and you are regularly recognized, praised, and promoted well above the pay scale of everybody else, that you get to live in the most amazing place. Okay, we got that one checked off already. But that in that amazing place, you have amazing neighbors as well. And they like you and they're helpful, but they don't get too much in your business. That the HOA that you live in never bothers you, but it's always good about making sure that everybody else's lawn and paint and cars are all taken care of. Are you getting a sense of what you have to arrange in order to have this life where you are well and everything is going? That your appliances always work, and they're on this automatic rotating basis so that every year you always have the latest one. Someone installs it, and as amazing as they are intuitive. You never have to read an owner's manual because they work exactly the way your last one did, and the buttons are in the same place. Same thing with your car. When it comes to politics, you always win. Same with your team. That every Sunday is fallback Sunday, and you wake up with an extra hour of sleep, but it never seems to impinge on the daylight at the other end of the day. Now, if you can pull all that off, maybe, just maybe, you will have something that we would call the good life. And yet, even as ridiculous and unrealistic as all that sounds, we also know that even as you get there, as you get closer to it, too many people find themselves not with a good life. They find themselves still waiting for that next thing. The next thing is what's going to make, and then I'll be happy. That's plan A. Plan B is different. Plan A is, let's arrange all the outward contingencies. Let's control everything so that I get exactly what I want. And then maybe I'll be happy. Plan B arranges the inward contingencies, the only thing that we actually get to control anyway, right? It gets to arrange the way that we respond to the things in life. And it lives fully and realistically in an imperfect world that is sometimes heartbreaking. And it determines to respond not just by what we see, but what we know and the reality that we have with God. It is able to recognize and receive the gifts that are there that we often miss if we're so busy that we're trying to arrange the outward and we never get to work on the inward. So the key word for plan A is that somehow these are the things I'm entitled to. Plan B is these are the things I have been given. Plan A leads to that kind of toxic faith we talk about that's transactional, because everything you're doing, including your relationship with God, is trying to get God to align with and give you what you want. Transformational is what happens with the second, because it changes you from the inside out. Gratitude is a mindset where nothing is taken for granted, but everything is received as granted. It is received as a gift. And it's an inside job. And it's worth investing in. And if we invest in it, we invest in what's on the inside of who we are. Which brings me back to the Gratitude Project. Here's what I'm going to suggest for the next month. I'm going to suggest for ways that you and I find ways at the end of every day or whenever it seems good to ask this question. What were the gifts of this day? What were the gifts of this day? And we're going to do it a couple different ways. One is, once again, as we have in the past, I have some books, field books. I think that's perfect for going out into the field every day. And you can write that down. If that's you, if you like to do this, if you like to stick this in your pocket or your purse where you can write as you go, great. If you have a journal, great. If you don't want to, maybe some people just speak into their phones or a microphone or record it some other way, great. If you want to do that at the dinner table with somebody and you can tell, it doesn't really matter how you do it. It just matters that you do it. That's what the science says. It says if you can somehow verbalize, organize, and just be mindful of the gifts of that day, it begins to change you. It begins to change the wiring of your brain. It begins to change the insides of your soul. It begins to do all those things that we would pay money for, but somehow seem so reluctant to actually invest our time in. Because the last misperception about gratitude is it should be natural. That I will feel grateful when all the good things happen. That gratitude, if I have to work at it, isn't real. It's the same nonsense that we tell ourselves about love and about talent. Because the truth is, it requires investment. Anything important does. We give ourselves to it. Now, do you have to do it every day? No, you don't. If you get to one of those days that, do I have to be grateful today? No, you don't. In fact, you could say, Russ says I don't have to do it every day. And then you'll say, that was one of the gifts of the day. I don't have to be grateful. See how that works? It's win-win if you're just paying attention. But here's the other thing I want us to do. I don't want to just do it by ourselves, because it is also a communal effort. So outside you will have what we have is our Thanksgiving trees. And it is, and there are these leaves that are hanging there. And between now and the end of November, our last Sunday of November, when we'll take them all down and read them and incorporate them somehow into worship, I'm going to invite you. Sandy Gager has put together this with Lisa, and just wonderful place. And you can take and you can write a word. What are you grateful for today? If it's a short phrase, write smaller. If it's too much, turn it over, fill it out that way. If it's really wanted, you know, then you can, you know, make two leaves. And you can do this every time you walk through those doors. In fact, every time you walk through those doors, let's use that as an invitation to say, what were the gifts of this day? What are the gifts for which I am grateful? What are the things that have been given to me? What are the things I do not want to take for granted, but understand them as being granted? What are they? I am looking forward to loading those trees up. And whereas in fall, most of our trees are losing their leaves, let's see if we can't reverse the trend and create a couple trees where they just get covered. Now, it is easy to do as well today because we come to communion. Communion table, the old word, what we do with communion is called Eucharist. It's one of the words. It actually literally means thanksgiving. It means gracious. And this is often called the table of thanksgiving. So what a great way to start and ground ourselves once again in reality. All the more so because that on this day, it is also known as All Saints' Day, which in our tradition is a way of saying none of us comes to this table by ourselves. All of us got here because somebody else spoke into our lives. All of us because somebody blessed us. And in just a moment, I'm going to invite you to be thinking about who that person was that comes to mind this morning. It may be a long list, but focus on one, maybe two. It won't be long. It's 30 seconds. What were the things that they said to you? How did they encourage you? Where did they give you courage? What did they do to strengthen? Where did they come alongside you? Because I'm telling you that while we do this every All Saints Day, every time we come to this table, we never come by ourselves. And those people, in a very real sense, are gathered at this table with us. Throughout all time in history, when we come to this table, we come to something that is an ongoing table, an ongoing feast, where all those people come and be part and celebrate, and we get to celebrate that gift. It is this amazing scene that we get to be a part of. Gratitude is not unrealistic. It's the most realistic thing going. It doesn't get us away from reality. It grounds us in the greater reality of God. It is worth the investment. And so I'm going to invite you to join with me on this gratitude project for the month of November. Not only are the results important for you, but I believe they are important for our families, our community, and our world. So let's begin. And let's begin with me, as you, won't you? I invite you, if you're comfortable, just to close your eyes for a second. And for the next 30 seconds, who is it that you're grateful for today? Who's spoken to your life? Whose shoulders do you stand on? Who gave you your courage? Who encouraged and was mentor? A teacher? Youth advisor? A friend? Family member? Who is that? And just in the next 30 seconds, savor that.